Good morning. Good morning. That's good. So I'm super excited to be here today, and welcome to the set of first breakout sessions here at Tech Days. I hope you will have a great conference. Today I'm talking about Skype meeting broadcast and how to get started with that. But first off, how many of you are using Skype for Business today? Almost everybody. That's awesome. How many of you have used Meeting Broadcast once or more? Couple of you. Okay, that's great. That's a good start. So for you that's been using Meeting Broadcast, at the end of the session, I'm going to share with you how to succeed with auditorium-style broadcasts. And we're going to talk a bit about the network, and we're also going to talk about how to succeed in general. For those of you who haven't been using Meeting Broadcast much, we're going to start from the start, so stay with me. Let's talk a bit about the challenge of large meetings in Skype for Business. Skype for Business is a really great collaboration tool. It's for real-time communication. You share content, you have video conferencing, you have chats, you have presence. That's awesome. But have any of you been in larger meetings with 20 or more people? Yeah, some of you have. And some of you may have tried to use it as a broadcast platform as well. Well, then you can get into another issue where people aren't hearing any audio, they are maybe not able to join the meeting, they may be external, so they don't have the federation settings set up correct. They may not see the screen, the content you're sharing, or the PowerPoint presentation. There's so much things that can go wrong, and you always have that guy that forgets to unmute himself and starts hammering at the keyboard, right? Like trying to kill that thing. Or the guy that has his lunch with him, with the lunch paper, like strangling someone with the lunch paper. That's great stuff, right? So Skype for Business is really great for collaboration, but not so great for those larger meetings. And that's where meeting broadcasts come in. Because Skype for Business, you need to have a client, you need to sign into a client, either download your app, you need to have it installed on your computer, installed on your Mac, used a web browser that's supported. There is a lot of factors that can go wrong, as well as firewall rules and block domains and so on and so forth. So that's where meeting broadcast is really great, because you still use Skype for Business to produce the meetings, but only for those who organize it, the presenter, the producer, the Q&A guy, and but the attendee, they consume it through a web client. It's streaming, it's on demand, it's available, and it's easy to consume. So that's why all of you should get started with meeting broadcasts. And let's look at the broadcast life cycle. So I'm going to walk you through every phase of how to plan, produce, archive, and share a broadcast. And let's start with the planning phase. And the difference between meeting broadcasts and or larger meetings in general is that you need to plan it. It's not something you do 5 minutes before you start the meeting that you're going to present for a larger audience. You need to prepare, you need to plan, you need to designate roles, who is going to be the speaker or speakers, who is going to be the producer to make sure that everything works okay, that the sound is okay and the video is okay and the content is being shared. Who is going to be the guy following up the questions? You need to delegate those roles. And also, you need to make sure that the environment is okay, that the room supports what you want to do, and that your laptop as well works as expected. Because one thing is being in a collaborative Skype for Business meeting. Another thing is being in a meeting where you want to broadcast your story, your message, your training to a larger audience. Then things should work. So if you look at the planning stage, in order to access the portal to plan a meeting, broadcast meeting, you need to go into a web portal. The web portal is hosted in Office 365, and the URL is broadcastskype.com. You authenticate with your Office 365 account that's enabled with Skype for Business, Online Plan 2, or some any of the enterprise queues, and you get this portal. Here you can manage your meetings, plan your meetings, customize your meetings, and so on and so forth. So what you do is go into new meeting. You name your meeting. In this case, I name it Tech Days. And we find the time we want to have the meeting run. And let's choose today. And then you define who is going to help you with the meeting. So you should find a producer, someone that can take care and make sure that everything works okay. You invite that person. And these people need to be part of your Office 365 tenant. So you can't invite external parties as of yet. So you add the Q&A guy or and make sure that they are resolving okay. In terms of attendees, you have three different types of attendees. You have anonymous, where anyone can view the stream. They don't have to authenticate. You have invitation only, those you specify within this meeting that's part of your tenant. That's invitation only. They need to authenticate with their Office 365 account or all company. That's everyone within your Office 365 tenant. They still need to authenticate. So three levels, but typically we choose anonymous. And then you can choose how it's being recorded, and it's recorded centrally, and also if it should be available after the stream on demand. So these are settings you can choose. And when we have finished creating the meeting, we save it, and typically we go back into the meeting and we customize, because we may want to tune some stuff here that you can do only after you have created the meeting. My favorite thing here is you can add add-ons into the meeting that's displayed within the web page where the stream is. So we have three different add-ons. The first one is Microsoft Pulse. And the thing is about Microsoft Pulse is you need to have a Pulse account, and you need to define the meeting every time and also find the ID to bring it back. Personally, I haven't used Microsoft Pulse a lot, but that's where you can get some real-time statistics on demographics, who's viewing your stream, and so on. When Skype Meeting Broadcast was launched a year ago, Yammer was the way of doing questions and answers. But the problem with Yammer is that you need to be part of that network, you need to have access to that channel, and you need to log in with the correct account in order to access it at all. So it was kind of some work that needed to be done by the end user in order to access that Q&A. So that's why Microsoft created the middle option here, which is the Q&A, which is a total web-based Q&A, it's anonymous, or you can specify your name, and it works on all platforms. You don't have to create an account in advance, it just works. So that's what I typically use today when I create meeting broadcasts. So we choose Q&A. We can also customize some links in terms of troubleshooting. Typically, I leave those to be default, and you can also have a custom link for attendees. Typically, those leading you to a content page or sign up for more information. That will be available for the attendees through the web page where they are streaming the meeting. So now we have planned the meeting, and we are ready to invite people. So if you go back to the broadcasting lifecycle, where you invite people is through Outlook. So we do want to use known technology in order to work with this broadcast. So if you go back into the meeting, if you click the meeting, you see you have a Create Outlook invitation. So when you click that, that's just a downloadable ICS calendar file that you can open within Outlook. And it's already specified with those organizers you wanted to add. And then you can, of course, use this invite to send out to a broader audience or just copy the link. So that's where you do the invite. It's a complete calendar invite with the correct time, with the correct date, and so on, to make sure that people are able to join the meeting. So now we have planned the meeting. We have set a date and a time of the day. We have sent an invite. We are now ready to produce the meeting. And to produce the meeting, we use known technology again, which is the Sky for Business desktop client for PC. That's the only client where you get the producer controls, where you are able to specify video content and so on and so forth. So let's look at that. We go back into the calendar invites. We click the link. And there you get the option to join as an attendee or sign up as a meeting organizer. And that's where you need to authenticate with your Office 365 account. Or hopefully you have a cached credential where you can go straight in. It launches a Skype for Business meeting. And you choose your audio device. And you are actually in a regular Skype for Business meeting. But notice you have some extra options. You have this broadcasting producer handle over there. So you enable video, you enable audio. Video is not obligatory, but preferred. And you share your content. And notice that it's only PowerPoint at this point, which is the content you can share. So no application sharing, no desktop sharing at the moment. So you have your PowerPoint, and you have your video, your audio, and you then choose who is active for video. And the main difference here between a regular Skype for Business meeting and meeting, broadcast meeting, is that it's the producer who decides who is in the active video window. So that's the main difference between a regular Skype for Business meeting, because that's where you have current speaker, right? So it jumps around between those who are speaking. But in this case, you are able to control whose video we are going to view. Another thing you should think about when producing a Skype for Business meeting broadcast is that it's not broadcasting before you have hit the broadcast button. And you should always be two or more logged in attendees, or you have the speaker and the producer, for instance, or two speakers. Because the thing is, when you hit live and the broadcast button and you see that you are live, you can, of course, choose the different options where you have video only, video and content, or content only. But the thing is that as soon as you end the meeting or you drop out of the meeting and there is no one left, the broadcast ends and you can't resume it. And that's a caveat right there, because anything can happen, and stuff usually happens when you try to broadcast to a larger audience, like your battery goes flat, you lose internet connection, the fire alarm goes off, something. And that's where you should have a redundancy in terms of who's logged in to make sure the meeting stays running. So when you end the meeting, you go hit the stop broadcast, and that's when the broadcast stops, or you leave the meeting. That's also when the broadcast stops. But you do control when the broadcast starts, and that's a good thing. So preferably, you should arrive and prepare for such a broadcast an hour before, or at least half an hour before, to make sure everything is working and that you're able to join the meeting, okay? And be ready at least 15 minutes before, just to make sure that when it hits the time, you are streaming. If you look at the Q&A section, then we need to go back into the portal for the meeting. Then you will see that you will have an open Q&A for that administrator. And those who can open it as an moderator is those that are invited into the meeting. This is a total web-based page. And we see we already have a question here that we can answer. What licenses do I need for these? This, I guess. Typos over there. It's all business and enterprise SKUs are supported for having meeting broadcasts within your tenant. So it's widely available. But the thing is that the moderator don't have to be in the room. It's only web-based. It doesn't require much in order to be that moderator. And there is two options here. The moderator could be someone that knows the content being presented, so they can answer and supplement with downloadable links and stuff like that. Or they make sure to highlight questions to the speaker. So if you have been presenting into a meeting sometimes with a larger audience, you get a lot of chat messages. You try to follow on that as well as focus on the content and present the message. Well, that's where you have that moderator in order to follow that up. So you don't have to have all those chat plings coming in all the time as well. So when producing a meeting like this, I have some hardware suggestions here as well. And those are more for that webinar you are hosting, where you are in the room by yourself and you are presenting a content, some training, or a message out to a larger audience. And my recommendation is, I personally use the Logitech C930E camera. Of course, all Sky for Business optimized devices are reusable. So if you have a camera that has better optics, of course you can use that. The reason I use this camera is it doesn't require an additional power source. So it's pure USB based and it's quite good picture as well. And I also like that it's possible to use with the camera tripod. So you can make sure that you can have a camera tripod somewhere in the room and make sure you have a good picture. One tip though is if you are presenting and you are walking around or maybe moving around in the picture, turn off autofocus, because if it's on, it tries to focus all the time. It can be quite annoying. And you can do that through the Sky for Business video settings and you can turn off autofocus in there and also adjust the white balance. So, and I also recommend if you're going to present some content, you should also add video and not just have the content being there, because you want to display your passion for a topic, right? You have some gestures, you like to like show with your arms your passion and illustrates, and that's something you want to come across in the meeting as well. So try to use video and maybe switch between content and video, or have them both in the picture at the same time. For audio, and this is a personal meeting where it's only me as a presenter, I like to use the Sennheiser Presence. But again, it's just a suggestion and it works with all optimized for Sky for Business audio devices as well. And the reason I use this one, it's first of it handles me talking loud. Because typically when I get passionate about something, I start raising my voice and almost like screaming at some point in a good way. So it handles that quite well. It doesn't. It still has a good sound. It's great for noise cancelling, and it's actually quite good sound even though it's Bluetooth. And it's quite small as well. It's not a big headset that dominates your view, and it's quite small, and it doesn't show that much. If you are having a meeting broadcast, you should not use a speaker device, because a speaker device is really great for Skype for Business, but not so great when broadcasting, because it picks up sounds in the room. Even though it's optimized for Skype for Business, it's built for being in a room. But still, when people are concentrating and listening to you, it gets annoying if you have echo in the room or you hear other sounds that are of stuff going on in the room, or maybe a colleague is in the room as well and again starts hammering, answering an email and hammering on the keyboard and stuff like that. So try to use a personal microphone. That brings the experience so much better, and this Bluetooth device also has great noise cancellation for even though you are typing on your keyboard, or if there are echo in the room, you will noise cancel some of that out. So that's a recommendation. So I actually used this exact equipment for, I created some YouTube videos using Skype for Business with the Logitech camera and the Bluetooth device. So if you can find my YouTube channel, you can find some examples there on how it sounds. And I think it works out great. And my goal for this is keep it simple. Use known technology. Use the technology I use every day. Don't overdo it, because it's the message that's in the focus, the content. And most of us probably working within IT as well. So our content changes weekly, monthly. So don't spend too much time when creating content. Try to make sure it's easy, it's accessible, and easy to get started with. Because the content is changing all the time, especially if you're talking about IT. Recently, if you have created Skype for Business adoption videos, Microsoft just changed the layout again on the Skype for Business client. So now you need to create all new training material, I guess. So again, try to keep it simple when you talk about content, especially from Microsoft. Okay, so now we have produced the meeting. We have succeeded with administering the meeting, joining in. We have the correct equipment. Now let's look at the attendee experience. So the attendee experience is within any modern browser, on a computer, on a Mac, on a Linux machine, on your mobile phone of your choice. So here's an example from my Android phone. So I have gotten the invite, and I click on join meeting, and I get the same web page where I click on join as an attendee, and you see that it's fast, it's available, and this is of course an anonymous meeting, so I didn't have to authenticate as well, and it's just starts broadcasting, and it broadcasts live. So I can run it as in full screen as well, and the thing here, and this is the major difference between a Skype for Business meeting and a broadcast meeting, is that attendees that are late can start from the beginning if they want, or start where you are today, or rewind if you say something crazy, right? So it is available for attendees, it's available for the modern workforce that wants to adapt their day to their needs. So if you have an all-hands meeting, not everybody should be or could be or have the chance to be available at 9 o'clock. But those who are, they can stream it or maybe watch it live. But those who came in late, 1 hour, 10 hours, a day, a week, can still watch the meeting from the start. So that is really good. So it makes the content more available. And typically, if you have an all-hands meeting, those who weren't there, like, they will never get that message. Or maybe if you record it and stream it and spend a lot of effort trying to record it and publish it, then maybe they will view it. But then they need to go to another place and not in that meeting invite you just sent. So that's where meeting broadcast is really good. It's messaging or content sharing on the attendees' premises. So it works on a mobile phone, on any device, and it's really accessible. And you also get to see the Q&A, and you can ask the questions right in the webpage. And this is the original question we answered earlier with the typo and everything. And it's really easy to send as an anonymous user or specify your name and send with your name as well. So, and I found this to be really accessible. Instead of chatting in a Skype for Business meeting with 50 people, I'm able now to, okay, I wonder about this thing. I have a question. I want you to elaborate on this, or did I hear it correct? You just type a question here and the moderator either answers it or bubbles this up to the speaker. And you can be anonymous as well, so you can still ask stupid questions, right? So you can ask about anything. I found it to be really, really accessible. And you don't have to log in anything. You don't have to create an account in advance. It just works. Cool?
Yes.
That's great. So this fall, I've been speaking in the US a lot. So I'm used to people responding in meetings. But now I'm back in Scandinavia. It's awesome. So, but the nod, I know that that's like epic shit. So yeah, thanks. Okay, so we have looked at planning the meeting, sending invites, we are producing the meeting, and people are joining in to view the meeting. But if you have an organization where you have a lot of internal users watching that all-hands meeting, you need to think about the impact in your network. And typically, when you think about Skype for Business in general, it's really vulnerable to streaming media from Facebook, from YouTube, from wherever. And typically, we like to say that during the Olympics, when everybody is streaming the same thing, everybody is wanting to know the results, you are streaming on big screens and people are streaming on the mobile phones, stuff like that. That may really kill enterprise collaboration. And that's where we need to look at this. And meeting broadcast has the same challenges. So what to think about is that this is unicast streaming and it adapts to your resolution. And if you run it in a small window, a larger window, or a full size, it can go up to HD video and consume 1.7 megabits per second. And you also need to think about, even though you're producing the meeting on premises within your network, the service runs in Office 365, and it's Azure Media Services that renders the video that you again stream from the internet. So if you have 100 users, 500 users, 1,000 users streaming the same content by 1.7 megabits per second, think about the bandwidth usage of your internet breakout. Think about how that affects your local area network. That may be a challenge. Hopefully and luckily, Microsoft has thought about this as well and partnered with some third-party streaming optimizers. You have two parties that are certified for meeting broadcast, which is Collective and Hive Streaming. So what they do, and this is for streaming technology in general, it works for all kinds of streaming, that people are streaming from the same source at the same time. So it's not just meeting broadcast, but meeting broadcast is already integrated with these third parties. What they do is create a peer-to-peer network where you have one computer downloading the stream and then distributing that into the network instead of having all devices log on and download the stream from the internet. So it's a small software install on each computer and device. It supports unmanaged devices and managed devices, mobile operating systems, and even Mac and Linux. So, and it's a zero-touch solution. So if you have that installed, they will figure this out themselves. So who is going to be the one getting it from the internet? Who is going to piggyback on the other clients? And you can do this for each branch office where you have the set of users. So you need to think about the personas in each office and location to think about, okay, are these people probably going to stream our all hands meeting or our training videos, and what kind of impact can that have on our network? So in order to enable this, you need to enable software-defined networking on the meeting broadcast platform, and that's just one PowerShell command line. So it's really easy, and it's easy to set up. And I talked to Hive Streaming, they're actually based here in Stockholm, and they said that for they have large customers. They have customers with that's worldwide with 100,000 workers, and they said they spent 14 days to get this implemented before from the first initiative to they're ready to do enterprise streaming. So it's easy to set up. The what takes the most time is to do the security check, make sure that the security department is okay with this, and also distributing the client. You can also do some behind-the-scenes testing and validation in advance by simulating a meeting to look at how this impacts the network, or if you have some bottlenecks within your network as well in terms of the audience getting the streaming in a good way. From another point of view, if your network is hammered with streaming, the end users is still streaming, right? So they can buffer the meeting. So it doesn't affect the attendees so much, but it may affect other services. So all other services within your network may be affected by a larger streaming experience. From a production point of view, you need to look at how you access Office 365. And Microsoft has clarified this a bit lately, where they have two focus areas. They have one focus area, which is from your client and devices within the network where the users reside to the nearest Azure edge. It's not Sky for Business edge, it's an Azure network edge. That's what Microsoft cares about, because what happens behind that Azure edge within the Microsoft network, they have full control. It's optimized, it's perfect, it's the most epic network in the world, according to Microsoft. And so you have two places you need to check your quality. You check it from your network edge into the Azure edge, and you check it from the client perspective. And there's a tool for this that Microsoft just released, called a network assessment tool that actually gives us quite good metrics without doing too much. It's an easy command line tool, and it will give you some good feedback. And you should run this tool as close as possible to your network edge and also in a regular client environment and maybe even for different branch offices. So here is the result. It's a downloadable tool. It's called, I'm going to write here, but I want to change my color. Oops. And white, thanks. So it's called a network assessment tool. Just Google it and download it. It's free for download. What it does, it sends and using the Sky for Business SDK, the Sky for Business media stack, in order to simulate a call to Office 365. So it will automatically find the nearest Azure edge to your location and send and make a call for 17 seconds. It turns out that 17 seconds, if you do that repeated times, that's not a distributed attack. It's like it has to be 20 seconds or something to create that. So 17 seconds is a magic number. Then you get some feedback here as well, where you can get packet loss, round trip time, latency, and jitter, and also the amount of packets sent. So this is really useful information in knowing if your production is going to be okay. Because if you look at packet loss rate, here is zero. That's pretty awesome. That should be below 5%. 5%. Or even lower, preferably below 1%, but 5% may be acceptable. So that's something you can do when preparing for the broadcast to make sure that the quality is okay. And if you look at round trip latency, should not be more than 100 milliseconds. And if you look at jitter, it should be below 30 milliseconds. So that's the values you're looking at. And these are general Skype for Business metrics. It's nothing to do with meeting broadcast, but the thing is that meeting broadcast, when you're producing it, that's a Skype for Business meeting. So to make sure that the source is okay, then you know that the attendee experience is going to be okay as well. So it's quite noticeable if you don't have a good network. If you have a lot of packet loss or a lot of latency, that's noticeable. So that's where you should prefer to use Ethernet connection when producing a meeting broadcast, just to make sure that the Wi-Fi network isn't playing on your meeting. And you should also know that Wi-Fi isn't supported for Skype for Business, right? Unless you have end-to-end quality of service. So if you don't have end-to-end quality of service, it is as good as it gets. But it may be bad, it may be good, you don't know. You want to know, that's why you want to do an Ethernet connection. Or 4G may work really well for a regular Skype for Business meeting, but not something you should base your broadcast on. So if you have about the same values from your network edge and from the client edge, and you think that it should be better, your next step here is to look at your ISP. What happens when the data leaves your network and goes over your ISP to the nearest Azure node? And that's where you can use Tracert or other tools in order to look at how many hops you have and work with your ISP in order to have an optimal route as possible to the nearest Azure node. Some ISPs also have a direct connection to Azure instead of having this run through the internet. So you should really work with your ISP in order to optimize this as well. And this is regular Skype for Business network optimization for Office 365. So this applies to all Office 365 workloads. So, okay, we thought about the network, we thought about the quality. Make sure that the streaming doesn't kill your network or affect other enterprise solution services, especially if you use Skype for Business with enterprise voice and telephony. You don't want this to affect your telephony solution. Next step here is archiving. And view on demand is a kind of archiving, and that is something you can decide on a tenant level if that's possible, or per meeting. You may have a really secret broadcast meeting that you don't want people to be able to view after the event, then you can uncheck that checkbox when you create the meeting. But it's really recommended for general content to enable view on demand, because then the user can access the meeting even though the broadcast has ended and consume it on their time. And Microsoft actually looked at the metrics on this, and they said that there were 50% actually watching the meeting and 50% watching it later. So if you don't enable view on demand, you may lose 50% of your audience. And that's not a good thing. You want to, when you first create a broadcast, you want to reach your audience. So how does this look? Still, you can use the same meeting link. This time I used my computer. You still join the event, and you are able to start watching the stream. It will start from the beginning instead of live, where we started on the mobile phone, and you are able to, of course, skip around. And also the Q&A is still available. So one thing about the Q&A, it needs to be manually closed. So it needs to, you need to make sure that you close out the Q&A when the broadcast is finished, but you still see the history here anyway. So that's a really good thing. So even though you can't ask questions, maybe someone asked the question you are wondering on. In terms of sharing the content, every time you create a meeting broadcast, and if you allow it, it will record a meeting centrally. And that's also a major difference between Skype for Business meeting, when you hit record there, that's processed locally on your computer. This is processed centrally within Azure. And it creates an MP4 file you can download. So if you go into the meeting that's ended, you will see that you get some reports here as well. You can download the CSV file on the meeting report and also the Q&A report. And you can download the MP4 file that you can either process locally and create better content, or just upload directly to Office 365 videos. So here I am in my Office 365 portal, and I'm able then to take that MP4 file and upload it into Office 365 videos. And this is a video platform that's available for all your internal users. That's where you can have all hands meetings and make sure it doesn't get shared outside the organization, because it needs to be part of this tenant in order to view this. And it's available for those users deem it should be available for. You, of course, define a title and a description. And what you see here is that the MP4 file is uploaded, then it's processed. So you don't have to have the browser running in order for the video to be processed. So if you go to the video, you see that it's still processing and it takes some time depending on the size of the file. And you can also tag people that this relates to and add tags to the video so it's searchable and discoverable within Delve and also within your enterprise search engine. So, and that's also where you shouldn't have too long broadcasts. I did a broadcast one time that lasted for 7 hours continuously, and the file got too big in order for me to edit it, and it was like 7 gigs or something. It's not too big, but it's not easy to work with. So it's not easy to upload, it's long. So try to make your broadcast as short as possible, because it's easier to manage after. So when you have when it's finished processing, you are left. You can leave this browser or close it or wherever. You will get an email telling you that the processing is finished, and you can go in and watch the video and share the video as you like. So you click the link. You get into the Office 365 video portal, and you're able to stream the content there as well. So, of course, this is a more preferable solution in the long run in order to archive it, because it's more discoverable. But still, on demand is a really good way to make sure the audience got the message. And if you look into Delve as well, you can see that it bubbles up in Delve. Here, I just need to change the color, blue, here. So that's where you can share it, you can discuss it, so on and so forth, and people can rediscover it. Cool? Yep, that's pretty, yeah. Okay, so let's close up with some upcoming features. So what I showed you now is how meeting broadcast is currently. And Microsoft, they only look 6 months ahead. So what I'm talking about here is something Microsoft has committed to deliver within the next 6 months. And it doesn't mean they're not going to do other stuff, but that's in later time period, right? And if you look at production, you will get recurring meetings, reusable join links, and rehearsal support. Because remember, I told you that if you end the meeting, it's ended and the link is dead. That doesn't scale in the long run. So now you can have a recurring meeting, like all hands every once a month, once a quarter, have the same link, recurring meeting, but you decide what kind of stream is there. So you can have you. What you will get is different instances of broadcasts. So you will also get access to the previous broadcast as well, and so it's easy to access, and you use the same link. And you also get rehearsal support. Rehearsal support is something you can tag the meeting for, and then you are able to test, do what you want, but no one is able to join in the meeting as an attendee. So you don't have to be worried if people are watching the rehearsal too early. And when you close that out, you just bring up a new instance, which is your production broadcast. When people join the link at a later point in time, they will stream the current stream or a later stream, but they will also get a menu to choose previous streams. So it's quite a good improvement. You will also get support for screen sharing through video-based screen sharing. It's not going to be application sharing. It's not going to be RDP-based, which is now currently in Skype for Business. It's only going to be your screen shared as a video. And that's where you can actually use and share your local video into the meeting and have that as content as well. So that's good news. You can schedule directly from the Skype Outlook plugin. So Microsoft wants to help you use known technology in order to manage your broadcast. So they want to bring the meeting creation part into the Skype add-in in Outlook. So now you can convert the Skype for Business meeting into a meeting broadcast meeting. And that's really good news. Still, I guess you need to go to the web page if you want to customize, but it's an easy way to get started with meeting broadcasts. You can also publish directly to Office 365 video, so you can skip the step where we download it and upload it. It can upload directly. And you will also get support for adding federated team members using multi-factor authentication or open authentication, which means that you can invite external parties as well into the broadcast, and that's a really highly requested feature. From an attendee perspective, federated and open authentication users can join as well as designated users. So if you want to have an authenticated experience, you can do that also now with external users. It's going to be a simpler way to join as anonymous, because you remember the web page you get. You have that green button and that blue button. Now you're going to get right into the meeting. Because, okay, if you have a larger meeting broadcast, there is 50 or 100 people joining the meeting, but you probably have fewer organizing the meeting, so they get another link. They can have a more cumbersome process, but those joining should have an easy process as possible. Closed captioning. Anyone saw the Skype for Business Ignite keynote? Well, some of you may want to go back to that and watch that, because Microsoft did translation in real time with captioning. And that's really cool. This is coming to broadcast meeting. It supports English, French, Spanish, and probably US English and British English. And it translates to 50 languages at launch. This is cool, right? The caveat is that you need to choose in advance 4 languages. So even if it supports 50 languages for your stream, it's only 4 that's possible. And the reason for that, it requires a lot of processing power to actually do the translation. It's based on the consumer Skype translation matrix, but it's ported into Office 365 to make sure it stays with your security boundaries. So it is the same technology, but not equally often updated. And if you succeed with closed captioning, you will get a transcript of your meeting. That transcript can be uploaded together with the video for rediscoverability. So everything you said may be searchable. So that's really cool. So these are some of the features coming, and there are also some unannounced features that I'm really looking forward to as well. So there's a lot of stuff happening with meeting broadcasts. But I want to close by talking a bit about the challenge with auditorium-style Skype broadcasting. Because since Office Communication Server took off, Link Server, and now Skype for Business Server, we are always trying to do this auditorium-style streaming as well. Have people in the room that wants to have an experience and have a native experience on the screen, but also have a native experience within the meeting. So this is a general challenge, and not specifically for meeting broadcasts, but for, with meeting broadcasts, you really want to succeed with this. If you have an all-hands meeting, you have people in the audience and you have people in the stream, you want to have a good experience for all of those. Or if you're running a seminar and so on. Much like this one, actually. So I thought long and hard about this, and I decided I want to close this challenge. I want to make sure we can do this. And I found some magical devices. Are you ready for this? The magical devices that makes everything just works in an auditorium-style streaming. Are ready? This one. It's a recorder device. It's called Zoom H4n Recorder. And it's magical because it has two XLR microphone inputs. So you can plug into your production or the auditorium style speaker device, or you can buy your own and bring that with you. But the magical part here is that it has two audio outputs. One USB output for your computer. It gets to be a separate audio device that you can use within Skype for Business. And one mini jack that you can put back into the speaker system to get the sound both into the Skype for Business meeting and also out in the room like this. Cool? So this is the device that really closes this. What you use around this, what kind of microphones and so on, that can be that can vary. But now you have the means to have the audio go into the meeting and into the room at the same time. It doesn't cost much, around $300. And it's you can use it for more than just Skype for Business as well. It's a general purpose device. Then you want to also capture the screen in a good way. So you have a presenter computer and a production computer, and you can capture whatever you're presenting on that screen. So here's the device actually used within the Skype, new Skype room systems as well to get HDMI in to the computer. It's called a Magewell USB Capture HDMI device. It captures HDMI and outputs as webcam into USB. Right? So now we have a USB-based webcam, your USB-based audio, and you're all set in order to succeed with your on-premises and broadcasted meeting. Cool? This is really cool. So it works for Skype for Business demos as well, because if you're trying to actually have a meeting and then you want to demo joining a meeting or making a call or something, you actually put the meeting you're streaming to on hold. So you need to use another computer, capture that screen, and have that broadcasted into your computer as well. And also, if you are presenting video content, it's good that you can have a good video content experience here, and that's that it's okay in the computer and into the meeting as well. So here's my setup. It can get complicated, but try to bear with me. So I have two computers, and preferably when producing a meeting broadcast, I want to have a more powerful producer computer with a good graphics card, because there's a lot of rendering going on and I want quality to be good. I have tried to use my Surface for this. It hasn't been optimal. So preferably you should have a gaming computer or that kind of computer in order to make sure you have good rendering power. Then I have my presentation computer. That can be anything. And if you start with the audio, here is a device I bought that has microphones like this. It's good audio, and it's good because you can have two speaking at the same time, or you can have more a professional conference where you can have two people with a mic, and if you are speaking back to back, you don't have to fiddle around with the microphones. So either if you're doing an interview, if you're doing like questions in the audience, it's good to have two microphones. And that doesn't scale well with Skype for Business optimized equipment, but this really works and it's good quality and it isn't that expensive as well. I think it was around $400 maybe. And so we output that audio into the recording device. It's XLR based, it's professional audio, or you can use the existing audio in the room as well. From there, we output the audio as USB into your production computer and also line out into your speaker. And those speakers are totally optional. They don't really scale in a large audience. It was just a bunch of speakers I found as a picture. So you can integrate with the audio system in the room. That's awesome. So you have your presentation computer, which has HDMI out into a splitter, HDMI splitter. One goes into the projector or video source, and then one goes into the HDMI device and USB into the computer as well. So now you have a USB audio, USB video capture. Now you're all set to have an awesome experience in the room through audio, with video, and also within the meeting. But there's one more thing. You will also, if you are presenting multimedia, you may want to have audio output from your presentation computer as well. And that can go into this converter. And this converter converts line out or regular music into microphone sound. Because this is a microphone recording device, and if you don't convert it, it sounds terrible. So now you have the means in order to get that audio from your computer into the room and equally into the broadcast. And the thing is, the caveat here is it cannot take two sources at the same time. So either you choose your computer or you choose your microphone. If you choose both, they will go out to a separate speaker. So it will only be left side will be microphone and right side will be audio. So try you, but you can switch this on the device. So that's your producer's role right there. Right? So it just became more important. Looks easy, right? But it works. I have tried it. It works. And it's really cool. Now we can have a seminar. You can broadcast a seminar. Or you can archive the seminar for later use. And of course, I didn't mention the camera here. But of course, you can have a camera connected here as well. And then you use the producer to switch between content or video with the camera. So, but it's these two devices that are the magical ones. The rest is like generic devices. So we solved the problem of auditorium style meetings. How cool is that? Yeah, thanks. So rounding off, if you really want to bring this to the next level, think about lighting. But that's where you're getting professional and it's not simple anymore. But of course, three light sources. You have the key light, the fill light, and the backlight. And that really brings up the quality. But it's not necessary. I don't think it's necessary. Keep it simple. Don't overdo it. And that's actually my motto as well. Keep calm. Keep it simple. Don't overdo it. Because the moment you start overdoing it, you do it one time, and then you don't do it anymore. Right? Takes too long. Takes too much money to produce this. So keep it simple. So, to sum up, how do I get started with Skype meeting broadcasts? Well, you need to use business and enterprise SKUs. It's available. It's on by default. It's available for government and nonprofit organizations as well. And if any of you are EDU-based, it will become available in January 2017. And the reason for EDU taking longer is that Microsoft had to tackle the issue with student versus faculty members. They don't want students to abuse the service, because students, if they can do that, they probably will do that, I don't know. But the faculty members should be able to do a broadcast. And of course, you should use the latest Sky for Business PC client, the latest update always. So, the broadcast lifecycle, plan. Plan every time. Prepare and plan. It is really important. Make sure everything is okay. When you produce, make sure you use the correct devices and don't overdo it. On-demand video, 50% of your users are watching your streams on-demand, so you really should make that available. And archive through Office 365 video, bubble it up in Delve, bubble it up in Enterprise Search. So it's all about democratizing broadcasting. That's Skype meeting broadcast, using known technology, known platforms in order to succeed with broadcasting. With that, I thank you for being here, and have a good conference.